Blog Talk Radio.
I pray on my knees every night. A leader starts seeing the light. 'Cause the road that we're on ain't where we belong. We've gotten so far away from the truth. God has been and always will be the foundation of life's liberties. For Christians like me and you, it's high time we spread the news. We can't sit around anymore. Come on.
State parental sovereignty. It's politics and religion. Don't tell me that I can't mix them. And we are going to have a great show tonight. I'm going to tell you, we've got I've got two very, very smart people on the line. And one is going to be your guest co-host. When we created this show a few weeks back, it was kind of a spinoff from Conservatives Coast to Coast. And we were going to rotate and make a two guest, a two co-host show with a guest on it. And I was going to do some rotating of co-hosts, and we haven't really done that yet up to this point. Our first guest co-host is going to be Karen Sigmund. And if you've been listening to the shows on Continuing for Truth Radio and on the Underground Hard Drive, you've heard Karen before. Let me tell you, she's working hard. She is tirelessly working hard. She's very, very smart, and she has got a team of people that are making a difference. You know, Karen fights against the media not doing their job. And Karen's going to be the special co-host with me tonight. So glad to have her with us. And her rage against the media blends in perfect with our special guest, Evan Syed. If you've not heard Evan speak, you need to go to my Facebook. You need to go to some of the links. You need to go to Evan's page and listen to the videos on his website. Let me tell you, he is he has got the reason why the media is in the situation that it is in, that Karen has to have a rage against the media. And we are going to have a great show tonight. He's got a book out. We're going to talk about that. We're going to do as we always do. We're going to go start at the basics, and we're going to look at how those affect things. You know, this is politics and religion. We always go back to the creation, and it's really, really simple, folks. You go back to Genesis chapter 1. In the first chapter, we learn about a creator, about an architect. And in the second chapter, we learn about the relationship between God and man. And we have a situation where man has been told by God, it will be better if you let me be the big cheese and take care of you, and you just do what I say. And you can have all the fruit off of any of those trees except for that one right there. Just leave that one alone, okay? Because if you touch it, you're going to die. And Satan came behind him and said, oh, but no, that's not true. We want to elevate you to be with God. We want to lower God to be with you. And you surely won't die. And he made a lie. And we know where we've gone since then. And this show has always been about going back to basics for that reason. Because when we start to go back to that basic, we answer a lot of questions. And Evan Syett answers a lot of questions as to why the left is always on the wrong side. They're always on the wrong side. And every time they go back to that wrong side, it makes a situation where they, you can't even discuss anything with them because they know they're on the wrong side. You know, I'm a hurdle jumper. I'm a believer in hurdles. I believe that if you live a life taking your problems as learning experiences and always focusing to do your best and to jump your hurdles, that you will make a better person. But the left doesn't like that philosophy. They want to take the hurdle away from you. They want to make the playing field everything even. They want to sanitize life from all the bad things. They don't want to have somebody's better at something and somebody is worse in something. They want everything to be the same. And it's a philosophy that's come since the beginning of time. We see it raise its eerie head. But I have never heard anybody that was able to explain that this situation as well as Evan Syett. And so we are going to have a great show. We're going to go back to the basics. We're going to talk about his book. We're going to talk about his experience. You know, he's done some fun things. He has been involved in a bunch of different things, from Letterman to Arsenio Hall to Bill Maher to win Ben Stein's money. And then I found out today that he was the communications director for the Bush campaign out here in California. You know, that's coming close to the grassroots. And I, you know, when I was the California state captain for Team Kane, I did a little bit of that. And so I see these different aspects. I know this conversation is going to be great. The first thing we're going to do is bring Karen in. Karen, welcome. It is so wonderful to have you here this evening. I really am a firm believer that the three of us are going to have an exciting conversation because we've already been laughing behind the scenes in chat. But I want to welcome you, Karen, again. You've been a good friend of this show. You've been on it a lot. You work hard. I want to let you just introduce yourself real quick and talk a minute about Rage Against the Media, and then we will bring Evan right in and pass him around and have some great discussion.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's great to be back on your show. You do just a terrific job. So much fun. I think this idea of co-hosting is great. Your mission is always fantastic, and the idea of having of me being the co-host with Evan is just too much fun. And you're right, we've been already laughing a lot behind the scenes getting ready for this, and it sounds terrific. I do head up an organization, Rage Against the Media, fighting media bias that is obviously on the liberal side, and I know Evan's going to talk a little bit about this or a lot about this. We do fight liberal. I used to call it bias. I don't call it bias as much as I call it corruption. These days, it's corruption. It's depravity. It's utter dishonesty. It's constant. It's pervasive throughout our mainstream media. And We all need to examine what our politicians do and say, but when the media picks a side and only advocates for that side rather than informing the public who needs to have an honest media that has integrity, we all suffer. So that's what we do. We have protests. We do things in social media. And in fact, I first met Evan, who was the MC of our inaugural protest last October. So this is, it's really just great. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always a great conversation with you, and we're going to have a good one tonight. And so with no further ado, we'll bring in Evan Syett, who I am looking forward to doing some laughing and some almost crying. Let me tell you how I've been describing him. He's funny and serious. He's serious and he's active. And he's active and he wants to make a difference. And he's got a great message. And Evan, welcome to the show. I'm going to pass it to you to just give your opening remarks, tell a little bit about yourself, and we will go from there, and then we'll start running around with questions and dialogue and just have a great time.
All right. Well, first of all, Scott, thanks for having me on. But frankly, I don't know if I would have accepted had I heard you clearly earlier. You said Team Kane. Actually, what you were talking about Dean Kane, the actor. And I'm just such a big fan, I thought that's what we were going to be talking about. So really, I'm unprepared for this completely. And Karen, nice to hear your voice again.
You too.
And it's just wonderful to hear you use words like depravity and dishonesty, and you're not talking about me.
not in this instance.
So, Scott, you want me to give my history a little bit? You know, I mean, political history. I grew up a New York City liberal Jew. This was not an intellectual choice. I don't believe that there is such a thing as an intellectual or intelligent choice to be a liberal. It was sort of what Breitbart called the false factory setting for somebody born into those demographics. If you were a New York City-born Jew, you were liberal. Because you knew at that point what I knew at that point, what all Democrats know, which is that Democrats are good and Republicans are evil. What else did you need to know? You know, Democrats like peace. Republicans like war because it's good for business. I liked peace, so I was a Democrat. You know, Democrats like the air. Republicans hate air. They like to pollute the air because they hate the air so much. And I like air, so I was a Democrat. You know, but I call myself a 9/13 Republican. Right? 9/11 didn't surprise me. Right? Obviously, I didn't know the date. I didn't know the target. The carnage sickened me. But I knew just enough, even as a brain-dead liberal, I knew just enough about the realities of the world to know that the same people who were murdering the Jews of Israel because they were the closest infidels, who were murdering the Christians in Egypt because they were the closest infidels, who were murdering the Hindus in India because they were the closest infidels, who were murdering children in Beslan, Russia because they were the closest infidels, would, when they could find a way to cross that ocean, because they were so primitive, they didn't have a means to get here until they hijacked our technology. But I knew once they found a way to get here, of course they would massacre the big infidel, the great Satan. What really surprised me, it opened my mind, it opened my eyes, it changed my thinking completely, is what I metaphorically call 9/12. So that's the days, the weeks, the months, and now the years after 9/11, and the liberal response to the attack. Here we were facing the greatest example of good versus evil of my lifetime. Everything the liberal is supposed to hate, religious fanatics hijack an airplane, murder civilians on that flight, ram civilian airplanes into civilian office towers, murdering 3,000 people, and what you have is the liberals defending the terrorists. You actually had Barack Obama's spiritual mentor, Jeremiah Wright, saying we deserved it. It was the chickens coming home to roost. Mm. You know, and this notion that the way to prevent further attacks was to be nicer to the terrorists, well, that was insane to me. And this was from the smart guys, the good guys. I mean, liberals are smart, Republicans, conservatives are stupid. That's what I knew. And here you have the smart and good guys making stupid arguments on behalf of evil. And suddenly I had to think What is it I really believe? Am I one of this group? How do these people think? And once I began to investigate that one single issue, it's got an expression. The first time you think is the last time you're a Democrat. All right, so that was the first time that I had to actually think about what I believed, because it was the first time that evil had visited my homeland. And once I began to do that, I saw that pattern everywhere. This intentionally ignoring the facts, and Karen, this goes right into what the folks in the news media do. They intentionally ignore the facts in order to tell a story that is 180 degrees from the truth. You know, an example that I always use is the Benghazi story, where you had a planned al-Qaeda attack specifically planned for the anniversary of 9/11, and the media put forth this narrative that was not only false, but you'd have to be a moron to believe it. The idea that it was a spontaneous attack based on outrage over a YouTube video that nobody saw that was put up 6 months earlier.
Right.
So my work is explaining why good, decent, otherwise smart people, because I don't think everyone in the media is a radical Marxist who hates America and was willing to lie just to undermine Western civilization. I think most of them have been inculcated into this mindless ideology that I've described in my book.
I have to agree 100%. And it's not – what I like about your message, it's in everything. It is in everything we look at it. It's in Hollywood. It's in TV. It's in the news. It's in education. It's in our
– excuse me. It's almost like it's a unified field theory of some sort.
Exactly. I've heard it described that way, actually.
Oh, you have? So I wasn't original. Okay. Yeah,
Yes,
it's all of my book, The Unified Field Theory of Liberalism. It is. Once you understand the first two laws, you understand everything, not about the ideologues, because we understand the ideologues. We understand the Marxists. We know that they want to overthrow capitalism and Western civilization and replace it with a Marxist-run government. We understand the Islamists. They want to overthrow Western civilization and replace it with Sharia law. But my favorite cousin doesn't want Marxism or Sharia law. You know, my colleague, the guy who writes jokes for Leno or whomever, isn't a deep thinker who is a Marxist ideologue. He's an idiot. But how does being an idiot lead to lying on behalf of evil? That's the purpose of this book. It explains that.
Exactly. And you know what? It comes down to all of the issues. You make a really good point about abstinence. You know, it's all about being on God's team. And the basic Judeo-Christian principles that we created this country based on, we know that from our founding fathers. And it's not a bunch of religious dogma. It's about some basic principles. And the one you use the most effectively of is abstinence in schools. It is. They've tried to tell us that abstinence is not a better way of doing things, but we know that it is a lot better for students to be abstinent than to be promiscuous before they're ready for their time. It causes them all kinds of problems.
Well, one of the things I really try to do in the book, because you recognize as somebody who goes out there and tries to convince others that if you are trying to convince somebody who does not believe in the scriptures, by using scripture, you're not going to get anywhere. So every point I make is a secular, practical point. So about abstinence, I think I say point blank, forget the morality for a moment of children engaging in sex before they're prepared. Let's just talk the practicalities. So yeah, time and again, this book is while I am hugely supportive of the Judeo-Christian philosophy and ideology and religion, I don't use it at all as a basis to try to convince others, because if they don't believe in the Bible, then saying the Bible says is useless.
Exactly. And I think that's what we've gotten wrong. We've mixed our religious dogma. And we all have different religious ideals about what the religion should be. And we haven't let ourselves keep separate from those basic principles that we know are out there. And they have taken to the point of making sure that our basic principles are even yelled and screamed at and painted as being bad. And that's
the definition. And, you know, what I really like about the last 5 minutes of this interview is Karen hasn't said a thing. I think is that the longest you've gone without saying anything, Karen?
Just you wait.
Oh, we're going to pass it back to Karen. And you know, Karen, you see this. You see in action, in print, in comment sections all over the country of different news media organizations, you see what he's talking about in reality when these people argue back with you. And some of the ad hominem that they throw and all they can, they get down to where all they can do is yell names and scream names. You face this on a daily basis. How does Noe Evan and his message and his explanation, which is great, of how this all works, how does that help you as you're going out and fighting this battle that you fight?
Well, I think one of the things that just came up when you and Evan were talking was when you brought up abstinence and how it ought not be taught in the school. And when we mentioned such an outrageous idea as teaching abstinence, we're called religious extremists and fanatics, and they completely shut us down. And yet the other side, is perfectly comfortable teaching third graders about condoms, which is, I don't know about you, but to my thinking, that's kind of an extreme position. And so they are perfectly content to pull things to their extreme, rejecting any other tempering of that way of thinking, throwing it out, rejecting it wholesale, and turning, as you say, to ad hominem attacks.
And if I may, Karen, and to disagree with the liberal renders you not merely wrong,
correct,
but evil.
It's
and that's,
evil.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, when Scott's talking about what we see when we go out on the mainstream media pages, that's exactly what we see. We put forth an alternative view to the one that they're hawking. They never have a reasoned argument, never, not one time, do they have a reasoned argument why we're wrong. It all becomes how evil we are, racist. And I was called, and this is really to the point of your show, you must be a Christian, somebody said to me.
That's
really the most, an evil, I mean, she was really just digging down deep. This was after a long list of other invectives. She hurled at me, you must be a Christian. That was about as bad a thing as she could, think of.
In my book, I actually challenge the reader to name a single issue, a single one, in which the Democrat makes an affirmative argument in favor of his position. Somewhere where he says, this is why my position is right, this is how it works, this is how it has worked elsewhere, this is how it will be implemented, this is what it will cost. You will never hear a Democrat make that argument. Instead, it's we're right because we're morally and intellectually superior. And anyone who disagrees is either a bigot, a homophobe, a xenophobe. There is absolutely not an iota of credit that they give to the other side's point of view. In fact, to disagree with them, and it's a line from Thomas Sowell, he says, to disagree with them renders one not merely in error, but in sin. You commit a sin by disagreeing with a Democrat.
Yep, it is really, it's absolutely terrifying. So when I do go wading into these Facebook pages with the media, I do hold on to things like what Evan just said and know and try to draw out from them that or even either the ones with whom I'm actually interacting or others who are reading it, that there literally is no reasoned argument, as you just said. It's to demonstrate to them and to others watching it, that it really is all about how they feel about me and how they
feel about
the other side.
Oh, sorry, Karen. And, Scott, if I may, I mean, the point I make in my book, I actually lay out the four laws of the unified field theory of liberalism. And the very first one I'm going to give you, I'm going to paraphrase it here, but thinking is an act of bigotry. Liberals believe that thought is an act of bigotry. Therefore, to not be bigots they refuse to think. And the concept behind this is anything you believe, Scott, anything Karen believes, anything I believe, anything your audience members believe is going to be so tainted by your personal prejudices. Right? Prejudices we all have. Prejudices we can't help but have are simply part of the human experience. Right? Prejudices based on things like the color of your skin, the nation of your ancestry, your height, your weight, your sex, and so on. Anything that you believe is going to be so tainted by your prejudices that the only way not to be a bigot is to never think at all. And so when it comes time for them to then defend their positions, having come to their positions without benefit of thought, when it comes time to try to persuade others, like Karen, they don't have fact and reason to use as ammunition. So all they have is the emotional ad hominem attack, which is, since Karen has thought and come to, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Karen, but comes to the position that teaching abstinence is an important part of, you know, a child's sexual education, that is an act of bigotry. So you're not just wrong, you're a homophobe, a xenophobe, no matter what, you have committed an evil act by thinking.
And also, absolutely, and also, if I do mention something like abstinence, or any of us does, not only am I evil, but my thinking can be wholesale rejected because I must be a Christian.
But the reason they say you must be a Christian is because that, to them, is an act of bigotry. You know,
exactly.
You must, the same thing with stop watching Fox News. And all of the other meaningless shut you down completely, don't have to listen to you, because not only are you, they don't have to overcome your arguments, you're already a bigot, therefore they don't even need to engage.
Right. This is Discourse in America.
And, you know, it's part of the problem is what we're outlining here. And the other part of the problem is we got a bunch of people that would not hear what we're saying right now if we stood in their front door and spoke through their front door. We got so many people in this country that are just laying down asleep. They have no idea of any of the current events that are going on in this country. I'm so thankful that I was taught from a young age to pay attention to current events. But it's not just the solution is getting people to understand that this is the way it is. People that want to take away your hurdles want to take away the strength that you get when you jump those hurdles. And so making everything good, making everything bad, you know, you talk about what happens when you appease evil. When you cannot accept that there is truly evil in this world, then you find yourself appeasing it. And we know what happens when you appease evil.
You know, it's not even just appeasing it. You flip flop.
You
flip flop good and evil.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the second law of the unified field theory of liberalism, which is that indiscriminate thought does not lead to indiscriminate policy. It leads to siding always. And this is important, I think, Scott, because when you talk about evil, you know, I don't know how much my cousin is evil and how much does facilitating evil make one evil. That's another discussion, perhaps. But it's also true of better and worse. I mean, when they won't give the winner or the better baseball player a trophy that's bigger than the loser, that's not a matter of, you know, facilitating or promoting evil. That's a matter of denying the existence of the better ball player. You know, and they try to eliminate grades in school or eliminate the valedictorian award, because that might make the number two feel bad. You know, that's not a matter of evil. So there are gradations of it, you know, from good and evil, right and wrong, better and worse. And this was, believe me, it was unwieldy having to write those every single time I got to that sentence. But I thought it was essential that it not simply be a matter of good and evil. It's a matter of anything being better than anything else. And I'm not sure the left doesn't understand that there are things that are better. They think the human being is incapable of recognizing the better because of his prejudices. So the way to eliminate prejudice is to eliminate rewarding of the better. This is why they will attack Christianity and Judaism, because in America, Christianity and Judaism is beloved. And further, Christianity and Judaism, the Judeo-Christian heritage, has proved itself to be exceptional by the exceptional success of Western civilization in general and America in particular, and let's not forget Israel in particular. And therefore, since nothing's allowed to be seen as better than anything else, the success of America proves an injustice has taken place. Why should we be successful if we're not special? And given that we are the most successful nation in history, the liberal has no choice but to see us as the greatest injustice. So it doesn't just make everything meet in the middle. It doesn't just eliminate the recognition of evil or appeasing evil. It flip-flops. Everything that's good becomes bad because it's recognized as good, which means it must be the product of our bigotry.
Exactly. And we're at the bottom of the first hour. I want to remind everybody this is for Contending for Truth Radio. Karen,
before you go further, are we doing a second hour? Are we doing a second hour? Because I've got a speech to do at 6 p.m.
I mean, anybody that might come in. And okay. I also want to say go to evansayet.com and get the book.
Spell that for them.
What's that?
Spell that for them. Evan Say It. E-V-A-N-S. Evan Sam.
evansayet.com. And go get the book. Don't go to Amazon and get the book. Amazon wants to take the little cut. Go to evansayet.com. Get the book. I'm not trying to tell you to get the book to make Evan rich, because I can tell you about authors right now. I've interviewed a lot of them, and there's none of them getting rich right now. This is about getting the message out. Evan can come on here and with Karen and I have a great discussion, a great dialogue. Get the book. Read the book.
By the way, there is absolutely nothing wrong in Evan getting rich. So buy two books.
No, it doesn't. I just know how the book industry is right now, and you're not doing this. You didn't put a book out for fame and fortune. You put the book out because you want to get the message out. And
no, that is correct.
And fortune pretty well over the last long time. And so we want to make sure we get that out. And let me tell you, we're going to go into the second half an hour. And I want to go back and, Evan, have you kind of really outline kind of where the book goes. Do a real quick little infomercial for us, because we're going to use this archive over the years. It's permanent. And when every once in a while I'll be linking it, want people to go back and understand exactly what the book is about. I love your title, and I love the concept, because we know that there are certain things that you learn when you get to kindergarten that should take you through the rest of life. But they used to teach in kindergarten, sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And now they teach, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will hurt me every time. And
that's because of what
we're talking about. Now, when I teach my nieces, I teach them, you know, the tongue's a powerful thing. You be nice when you talk to people. But I also teach them when people talk bad about you, you got to learn to throw it over your shoulder, because it's going to happen all your life, honey. It's going to happen. Go ahead, Evan, with that. Run with that and the book and give us a quick rundown. And then after that, I'll pass it right back to Karen.
Okay. is Karen still on the line?
She is.
Okay. Well, so we got off on a little direction. I wouldn't mind following it. And then I'll outline the four laws of the unified field theory of liberalism. But truly, there was a book written about 20 years ago that was so embraced by the left that it became not only one of the biggest literary phenomena in all of human history, it continues a quarter of a century later to be in the top 0.5% of all books sold on Amazon every single day. And this, your audience has to understand this. This is not a tongue-in-cheek attack on the shallowness of modern-day thought. This was a proud screed by a gentleman who wholeheartedly believes, and here's the title of the book, All I Ever Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And he advises his readers, his followers, millions and millions of them, to take any one of the lessons learned in kindergarten and extrapolate it. This is a quote. Extrapolate it into more sophisticated adult terms. and apply it to your own life, your family life, your community, your nation, and your world, and you will find it holds hard and fast and true. And the reality is, if you take any Democratic Party position, boil out the pseudo-intellectual rhetoric that holds it up, what you get at its essence is one of the laws, one of the rules that you are taught on day one in kindergarten. For example, in kindergarten, you're told, don't hit anyone. Well, in the adult, grown-up, more sophisticated form, that's really not the answer. Doesn't matter if it's Hitler or your neighbor who steps on your toe, war is not the answer. And if you look at, and this is the example I use, I don't think it made it into Volume 1, I think it's maybe in Volume 2, but if you look at the difference between the left and the right and our position toward the United Nations, every five-year-old child loves the UN. I remember going around the neighborhood with all the other kids on Halloween trick-or-treating, and we all had a bag for candy and a little box with a slit on top for nickels and dimes and pennies that we would then give to the United Nations. Then both the liberal and the conservative child grow up, and they learn some things along the way. We both learn that the UN peacekeepers turned their backs so the Rwandans could be massacred. Because conservatives think, we factor that into our opinion of the United Nations, and that lowers the esteem in which we hold them. The liberal, however, doesn't hold the UN in any lesser esteem because of that. Why? Because what they learned in kindergarten was not about massacres. They learned about that after 5 years old. Therefore, they don't need to know it. What they learned in kindergarten is don't hit anyone. So they love the UN because the peacekeepers didn't hit. It led to a massacre, but the law in kindergarten, you know, you and I, because we think, when we learned that the UN invited Yasser Arafat to spread his genocidal vitriol to the General Assembly, that lowered the UN in our esteem. But the liberal continues to adore the UN just like he did when he was five. Why? Because this genocidal vitriol is something they learned after they were 5 years old. What they learned in kindergarten is everyone must be invited to the party. So this genocidal mass murdering terrorist had to be invited to the party. What a great place this UN is. I can go on if I'm getting Karen to laugh.
It's true.
No, right? Well, okay, we learned, both the left and the right, learned that the UN made the Sudanese the head of the Human Rights Committee while they were committing genocide. That lowered the UN in our esteem. To the liberal, they still adore the UN just like they always did. Why? Because you learn about genocide after kindergarten. What you learn in kindergarten is everyone must get a turn. It was the Sudanese turn to be the human rights, the head of the Human Rights Committee. Therefore, the UN upheld the kindergarten rules, which is all they ever need to know. And if you look now, the liberals adore this evil enterprise. No laugh, Karen? I wasted my time on the whole last sentence. No laugh at all? Pretty women are difficult, man. I'm here. I am tap dancing, trying to get a laugh, and nothing.
I laugh.
Well, and you know, we
it's
really
horrifying.
Do because we look at things going on, and we go, but they're doing the opposite of what they're supposed to be doing. This doesn't make any sense.
But it does make sense. It makes perfect sense if you read my book.
Exactly. Go ahead, run with it, Karen.
Well, I was just thinking, speaking of doing exactly the opposite, I know in your third, being the media person, in your third, the most recent Heritage speech, you talk about how and why the media has gotten not just some, but every single major story over the last several decades, not just a little bit wrong, but completely wrong.
As wrong as wrong can be.
Right. So I was wondering if you wanted to tell us a little bit explain a little bit how the media, my favorite thing, my favorite target, is just so completely exactly wrong, stunningly wrong at every turn.
And let me echo what Scott said at the beginning of the show. You truly do great work, and you're, if not the only, then certainly one of the only true activists out there taking on this important issue. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
You know, the thesis of my book is that the modern liberal was raised to believe that indiscriminateness, not using their brain to discriminate between the better and the lesser, the right and the wrong, the truth and the lie, because the opposite is the act of discrimination, well, that indiscriminateness has different words in different arenas. And in the media, that word is neutrality. You see, because the modern liberal journalist is raised to believe that objectivity, the single most important trait in good and accurate reporting, is impossible. This is what the great liberal scholar, let's call him, Howard Zinn said. He said, objectivity is impossible. It is also undesirable. Well, if objectivity is impossible, then how are they supposed to report the news? They can't report what they objectively see because they have too many prejudices to be objective. In fact, objectivity, the single most important trait in good and accurate reporting, is now an act of evil, which, by the way, is the reason that the left hates Fox News. Okay, you don't hate people or organizations because they're wrong. You hate people because they're evil. So what is it that makes Fox News evil? What makes them evil is that their news division reports objectively. That doesn't mean they're always right. That doesn't mean that human beings don't make mistakes. That doesn't mean that there aren't unintended consequences. But you know how you know Fox News is more accurate than any of the other news media outlets out there? If you watched CNN leading up to the first Democratic vote in Iraq, you were stunned when millions of people danced in the streets for hours. They were telling us that our mission was a failure, that the streets were chaotic, that no one would vote. If you just watch both Fox News and CNN, and don't even think about MSNBC, and then wait a week or two or a month and see what the actual results are. The other outlets told us that the Arab Spring was going to bring Jeffersonian democracy and that Fox News were Islamophobes for saying the Muslim Brotherhood might take over. Flash forward, the Muslim Brotherhood took over. So you can tell which one is a more accurate news source by seeing the outcome of the stories as they reported them. All right, so here's how neutrality is the same as indiscriminateness. If they are neutral, they cannot say, for example, that the Jewish culture is better than the Arab/Muslim culture. Then how are they to explain the Islamic terrorism that where they blow up bombs, they blow up buses in Jerusalem, or they take over kindergartens in Ma'alat and murder kindergartners? Well, you and I can say that Islam has evil teachings. Let's just put it that way. And that they are the evildoers in that case. But if you're not allowed, because you'd be a bigoted journalist, to report the objective truth, if you must be neutral, if you must say both cultures want peace, then why would these peace-loving Muslims murder these innocent Jewish children? It has to simply be something the Jews did to provoke them. Now the job of the journalist then isn't to arrive at the truth. In fact, every story they write is going to be a lie. They're going to lie to make the Islamic culture look more peaceful than in fact it is. And at the same time, they have to find something the Jews did to make these lovely people become terrorists. And they'll search and they'll find, and then finally, aha, I found it. They murdered those Jewish children because a guy built an extension on his house in East Jerusalem. That's actually the narrative, that the reason there's not peace between the Muslims and the Jews is because the Jews build houses in East Jerusalem. You'd have to be a moron to believe that. But there's nothing else the leftist media is allowed to report, except that somehow these lovely Islamists were provoked. The same thing with the Benghazi story I told earlier. You'd have to be a moron to believe that this YouTube video from 6 months earlier was the cause of that attack. But if you're not allowed to say there's something wrong with Islam, then you have to believe the most ridiculous things. And not just believe it, report it.
Right. And it has to be literal. Of course, you're right. It's not just another plausible thing, but when they start from the position of what the answer must be to support their worldview, and then scrounge around to find whatever it could possibly be to support that worldview. So you come up with a hypothesis and a conclusion, and then you just find whatever evidence there is out there, data, even if you have to manufacture it, to support that conclusion instead of being objective, as you say. They already start with the conclusion and then find whatever they can to support it.
Right. And just the only thing I would add to that is that what I do that is unique, that has made this that original talk, when I went into Washington as a complete political unknown, because I wasn't even in politics at that point. When I gave the speech that is now the single most viewed lecture in Heritage Foundation's history, right? It's got not Ronald Reagan who spoke there, not Margaret Thatcher who spoke there, not George Will or whomever, Mitt Romney who spoke there, me. And the reason this talk went the way that it did was simply because it lays out the answer to the question that so many people have, which is, why do good, decent people? These are how, you know, Karen, you said that they have their preconceived beliefs. But
yes.
Why do their preconceived beliefs always benefit the evil, the failed, the wrong, the ugly, the vulgar? Why are they always not only on the wrong side of every issue, but diametrically opposed to all that is good, right, and successful? And again, the answer is, if you can't say Islam, for example, is evil, then you not only must attack their victims, they must be the provocateurs, because otherwise why would these nice Muslims do that? But you must elevate the evil you ascribe to the innocent to exactly the level of the evil that you have to champion.
Right. It's a stunning revelation. And when it comes to Benghazi, what always strikes me isn't just that, you know, they came up with some other reason for the murders in Benghazi. Not only did they not say that they didn't know, when everybody knew that this was going to happen, the British had already pulled out and Ambassador Stevens had requested more aid for weeks and so on and so forth. It was entirely predicted on the anniversary, as you say. Everybody knew that this was a complete cauldron. Not only did they come up with some wishy-washy other reason for the attack to have happened, not only was it just a YouTube video, but it was a YouTube video made by an American who was exercising his First Amendment right of free speech. So not only did they come up with some other excuse counter to the reality of it, but as you say, 180 degrees, finding, right? Exactly,
yep.
Exactly the opposite. Someone in America who exercised his constitutional right to create a video, who is now still in jail.
So free speech leads to the death of American ambassadors,
exactly.
Not Islamic terrorism.
And the president of the United States, who has sworn to uphold the Constitution, blamed it on this man using his First Amendment right, and also denounced him at the United Nations.
Which is why the second law of the unified field theory of liberalism is indiscriminateness of thought does not lead to indiscriminateness of policy. In other words, the media doesn't just indiscriminately pick an excuse to defend
right.
The Islamics, but it leads to siding with evil, failure, and wrong, and against the good, right, and successful. Freedom of speech is part of America's good, right, and successful heritage. It is part of what makes us good, right, and successful. So no, it's not an accident that in order to defend the evil of the intentional murder of an American ambassador, our peace ambassador, the man there as a peace emissary, And in order to protect his murderers, they didn't just, as Karen just pointed out, make up something in the middle. They went and they attacked specifically, and they being the Obama administration and those who support them in the media, went specifically for the jugular of what is good and right, America.
They do. And, you know, I would say that things like Obamacare and Common Core are designed to institutionalize this systematically in our system. Common Core and Obamacare have a huge thing in common, and that's they want to upset the whole entire system in order to fix a few small problems. Obamacare was not thought to give health insurance to 50 million people that didn't have it.
Right.
Obamacare was designed to interrupt the whole situation so that everybody ends up eventually with the same care. And nobody has better care than somebody else does. And nobody has no care because they just refuse to work. And the same thing with Common Core. Common Core is coming in to make sure that every teacher teaches everything the same and that students, there's no more valedictorians. There's a whole range of goals that they want to do exactly the same thing you're talking about in the schools. Want to level the playing field. Want to take away, nobody's going to be better at something or be worse than something.
Here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that is that, yes, people will be better at things. You know, unless they are completely denuded of their uniqueness, some people are going to be harder working. Some people are going to be smarter. Some people are going to be more accomplished. So not giving the trophy to the better athlete really doesn't accomplish anything other than to give the lesser athlete a lack of incentive to achieve. And now the liberal has to explain why it is that the people who are better, harder working. You know, if you have a business that's successful, but you didn't build it, then the question asked, first, it's unfair that you have it. Two, it's greatly unfair that it's successful. And three, why didn't whoever built it build one for the failure? So obviously those who succeed because they engage in the behaviors that tend to lead to success are the greatest injustice because they did lead, those behaviors did lead to success. And those who engage in the behaviors that lead or tend to lead to failure, for example, promiscuity tends to lead to failure. Not in Karen's case, but in other cases. Hello? that was a joke, folks. But for most people, promiscuity tends to lead to, for two generations, to be less likely to achieve success. Single mother who now has to raise the baby or go through the horror of abortion, and then the second generation, the baby who now is raised without a father. But since that behavior can't be recognized as a behavior that is lesser, that is more problematic, that is more troublesome, suddenly now it's unfair that single mothers and out of wedlock children have a lesser outcome, so they need to be compensated for the unfair way society has treated them.
Exactly.
Have we not gotten over the promiscuity joke yet? The silence was a joke, kids. You know, your silence is saying maybe I touched upon something there.
You know, it comes to home because I was raised, you know, I grew up in a time frame where everybody said there was no such thing as a Beaver Cleaver household. But I was raised in one. I was raised in a household where my mom and dad were faithful to each other. They stayed abstinent until they got married. Because of that, they had a very wonderful sex life until the day my mom died. They were as in love with each other as two people could be. I had that example in my grandparents in both sides.
Go ahead. If my clock is correct, my clock is wrong. We've got 6 more minutes. Because I've got to give a speech. I'm in the hotel, but I've got to get ready to give a speech at 6. So let me tell you how negatively the left looks at Beaver Cleaver families. right? There was a gentleman named Danny Goldberg. He started a company, I believe it was called Interscope Records, and he was essential. He was at the forefront of bringing gangster rap, the violence and the vulgarity of gangster rap into children's lives, into the mainstream, making it the things that now win Grammy Awards for best song, like It's Hard Out There, It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp. And he and another gentleman, Michael Mann, who did the same kind of thing but with television and then movies, brought violence and vulgarity into the mainstream and into our children's lives and into PG-13 rated movies. And they were confronted by this truly evil, this horrible, religious, fanatic, right-wing Nazi by the name of Tipper Gore. And Tipper said to them, you know, we would like a little help here to protect our children. Can we put warning labels on some of the more violent, vulgar records? And can't we do a little bit better job labeling R-rated movies that are going to damage our children with the violence? And Michael Mann said this. He said, Ms. Gore, it seems to me that there are three kinds of violence. He said, there's a cartoon kind of violence, which is what we grew up with, where you don't see the consequences. You don't see the blood. You don't see the pain. He said, then there's the realistic portrayal of violence. That's what we try to do with our records and our movies. And then he said, and then there's the worst kind of violence of all. Karen, Scott, you ready for this? What is the worst kind of violence of all? The psychic violence of the Bill Cosby show. The Bill Cosby show, the least violent television show you can imagine. Leave It to Beaver-like television show with just love and support and a strong dad and a married mother and father. What was he talking about? He was talking about, since that kind of family doesn't exist in the black world, according to this white racist liberal named Michael Mann, when black children see a happy, healthy, functioning two-parent family like that, it hurts them. It does violence to their psyche to see a good, healthy, happy black family. How sick is that?
Exactly.
And yet, these aren't just two idiots on the left. Danny Goldberg is a leading liberal voice and has entree and access to the minds of our children.
It's horrifying.
It is scary. And we are almost up at the top of the hour. And Evan, we will let you go get to your speech. Let me tell you, I'm excited about your work, and I'm excited to watch you do what you do ahead. I know you're going to be at the Laugh Factory here pretty quick. I made the mask up when you were on Women Patriots the other night. I'm going to be down in L.A. At the end of July, so I'm hoping around that time you're going to be there. I will come and see you.
I would love that. If I'm not playing in a club, come by the coffee shop where I work, and I'll tell you a joke for free.
Well, that would work. That would work. And let me tell you, Karen will tell you, I've got a soft place in my heart for people that are out working hard at getting the message out.
That would be Dr. Karen Sigmund.
that would be her too. Let me tell you,
mightily.
But you've got the right message. You go back to the basics. You explain why the problem is there, not just stand around. In fact, you almost made it very clear when you were talking at the Heritage Foundation that there's certain things you just don't. You don't even discuss that stuff out in the fringes. You know what you know, and that's where you focus on. And it's right back down at the basics, and I'm a firm believer that that's where we got to go. I believe when we talk about the fringe of any issue, we don't understand why we believe what we believe, and that's where we go off wrong. So I want to thank you.
I think that it is too easy to dismiss the other side as evil and stupid and Marxist, and when in reality, Katie Couric is not evil. She's not all that bright. She might be articulate. But it's not her evil plan. So we need to understand how they think. And my book, The Kindergarten of Eden, How the Modern Liberal Thinks, is considered by many the definitive explanation. So audience members, buy it, please.
Please do. And that's evansayet.com. That's evansayet.com. Go there and check out the videos. Check out the other stuff that's there. It's a great site. It's got some great stuff. Karen, I'll pass it back to you for any last things you want to say with Evan.
I think the book just explains so much and is so useful to anybody who is trying to figure out why their Aunt Sally just doesn't seem to get it at all. Who Aunt Sally is the nicest person in the world, but somehow is utterly misguided.
And by the way, Aunt Sally, Aunt Sally is the one who's promiscuous. I got that one wrong.
I was going to take you to task about that a little bit later on in the chat room.
I have no doubt.
Aunt Sally, yeah. But really, it does answer so much. In all three of the videos, you will be thunderstruck by the insight that Evan answers all the questions that have sort of been niggling around in the back of your mind when you try to deal with
it. And may I just add one thing to all of this? Not only is everything Karen just said true, but I was also voted the 8th hottest author by the Politichick in the Conservative. So hot and smart. Is that not a great combination?
That's true. That's hot off the press today.
And by the way, press we can trust. Not the left. This was objectively honest reporting. All right, kids, I gotta go.
All right.
Well,
great to talk
so much,
to you.
Evan. We will keep in contact and we will keep pushing and we thank you for the fight. Thank you much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Karen.
Bye. Bye, Evan. Thank you. And thank you, Scott. It was great fun.
Oh, it's you know what? That was a great interview. I've been able to talk to some pretty neat people over the last few years in Blog Talk. It's offered an opportunity to have some great dialogues. We've had a few of them with you in Rage Against the Media. There's just been an incredible ride because I can sit down and make a connect with somebody like Evan. And then like we talked about, you and I talked about this on Don Miller a few weeks back. It's about bringing the people together at the table. I want our listeners to know who Evan Sayet is so that they can help get his message out. Because the more we get that message out, and here's a great illustration. If we could get everybody in Rage Against the Media to take some training from Evan Sayet, they're going to be a whole lot more effective at what they do in Rage Against the Media. And
it's about
everybody together at the table, wouldn't you say?
It's past time. We really do have to. Absolutely. Yep. Well, you do a great show, Scott.
Well, and you do great work, too. We are excited to continue to work with you and help you all if we can. Want everybody also to go look up for Rage Against the Media on Facebook or go to rageagainstthemedia.org. Make sure that's not .com. I found that out the hard way today. rageagainstthemedia.org. And check out what Karen's doing. I'm going to tell you, she's working very, very hard. And I know a lot of people out on the Internet. And I know some people that are writing some books. I know some people that are doing certain things. There's not very many people working as hard as you're working. And I highly respect that. And you're always been a great friend of this radio show and this radio network and the work I do. And we look forward to continuing fighting this fight together, Karen. I'll pass
Thanks
it back
so
to you for any closing remarks, and then we will play the song out on the show.
All right. Well, yes, please find us at rageagainstthemedia.org, and we're actually holding a protest here in L.A. August 17th. So if you're in the L.A. area, join us and find us on Facebook.
And we will do that. And it was a great show. Evan is gone, and we are going to go out with the same song that we came in on. This is God's Country. D-Rock is another patriot that's out working hard. His way of working hard is making some beautiful music. Go to D-Rock's website as well. Listen to some of his music. Oh, his song, Patriot Girls, and keep on keeping on that we use Thursday on the Free Don Miller Show. We are going to go out with, this is one of his newest songs. We started out with it. We're going to end with it. This is God's Country. I want to thank everybody for being here.
On my knees every night, a leader starts seeing the light. 'Cause the road that we're on ain't where we belong. We've gotten so far away from the truth. God has been and always will be the foundation of life's liberties. Like me and you, it's high time we spread the news. We can't sit around anymore. Come on and stand up, stand up, and fight for what you believe in. This is God's country.
He's the way.